Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. Is it time to play Odyssey yet? I want to play Odyssey. I'm hearing it's getting 13 out of 10. I need to play Odyssey.
It's an absolute delight from what I hear.
My favorite is that multiple review outlets you have that exact same quote as the quote that was picked.
Yes.
which like, if I'm the reviews editor and I see that we were quoted as that and at least one other site, that phrase is now banned. That's the mixed bag of 2017.
I almost feel like going on and like editing Don's review and adding this.
Adding it in there. And resubmitting our Open Critic review to just say it's an absolute delight.
Yep.
That's a good plan. We should do... John, go do that. Guillaume, edit right. those instructions out.
Give me one second.
And nobody tell Neil. And then we'll just let it go.
Of course. Why would we tell Neil? That spoils all the fun.
It spoils the absolute delight. Mm-hmm. So, if you can't surmise from our immediate digression, it's October 26, 2017 at 9:48 p.m. for me, and Mario comes out in 2 hours and 12 minutes. So, I'm recording a podcast where I'm not talking about Mario, because this is Radio Free Nintendo, and Nintendo doesn't always have to give us what we want. At least not all of us, Greg. It's episode 545... Hi, Greg.
Hello. It's been out here for all of 2 hours and 49 minutes. And I've
Fuck
been
you and you being on a different part of the earth.
I've played it for a pretty good chunk of that aforementioned span of time.
One day the earth will rotate in the right direction.
I can't guarantee I won't be playing it in the next half an hour or so.
What are you, John Lindemann? Jesus.
Greg will be put quiet. It on mute. Come on.
That's not the way you do it.
That's not the way you do what, John?
That's not the way you unprofessionally do an unprofessional podcast.
Like, I wanted to point out that John added two layers of unprofessionalism to this podcast. He established the base level of unprofessionalism, which is what we're doing right now, and said, no, I can submerge below that. I can reach new lows.
There's always another level. There's always a lower gear that I can kick it into, James, just when I need to.
We already established the lowest gear is the fact that I had to ask explicitly for you all to not have sex while recording. So I'm going to go ahead and say that's like playing Samus is like one step above that.
I was really impressed at the amount of people that actually, I think...
That took the bait and said, I could only have children's Radio Free Nintendo.
They took the bait on Twitter, which pleased me greatly.
All of my children were conceived during RFN segments. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. That's a nightmare I'm going to have to live with now, Guillaume Vaillant.
Yeah, well, you know, I really only have one demand, and that's you pause during our break, and that you resume when we start talking again.
It gives now playing a whole new meaning, am I right?
Yep.
It's all right, though. We don't do podcasts. We don't generally do podcasts that last for more than 4 hours, so there's no medically unsafe kind of territory going.
Why? Oh, Jesus, John.
Yes. My job is done here.
That segment was always terrible.
Now you just made it worse. The segment we don't even do anymore. Hi, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, James Jones. New business. I've got some. It's the newest of business. The most unsavory of business, except for what just happened a minute ago. So about 2 weeks ago now, I got an alert on my phone saying there was a package coming to my house. This has been a start of a couple RFN stories.
It's always a good story with you.
And they go real bad. And they only happen in my stories, which is bad. In past, there's been shoes, which we've talked about ad nauseum. Mm-hmm. There was once a box of what I would call like medical waste, but it's actually a couple Sonic games and some other stuff. Hmm.
The other stuff being Shadow games, Shadow the Hedgehogs.
Yeah, Shadow the Hedgehog, yes. This just turned into a latent character for a minute there, so that's good.
wait a minute, I know how this next one finishes. The calls are coming from inside the house.
I wish, because at least then I wouldn't have to deal with the bullshit that's still like the shadow box is still in my guest room because I dropped it in there because I didn't want to look at it. It's been in there for a while now. This time I got an alert that a package had been delivered and I didn't order anything, and I was like, well, that's weird. So it's a parcel sitting in my door, like in the door. They wedged it in the door for some high-achieving postal worker decided it needs to be here. So I got home from work and I pulled it out. And it's like it's a small shipping parcel, you know, like the bubble mailers. I open it up and then a handful of GameCube games fall out. But not like normal GameCube games. No, Japanese GameCube games. So like with the little box. No from address on it, just a UPS store in California.
Mm.
And my immediate thought was, oh no, it's happening again. And like not clear who they're from. So I tweet out a picture of them and I just go like, huh? And no response. I got some responses, but nobody like owning up to it. Like, gotcha,
of
bitch.
Course, criminals would never own up to it, right?
No, but terrorists would, John. And that's the thing.
This is true.
So the question is, are we dealing with criminals and terrorists? And the answer is neither. We're dealing with former host of the show, Dr. Jonathan Metz.
Mm.
I announced yesterday now that I was going to be streaming some GameCube games that mysteriously appeared. And he fessed up to owning or to being the sender. Apparently he, quote, found them in a closet and figured I could get better use from them than he would.
Yeah, was it actually his closet? Or
that's a question that I'm not prepared to answer. I had assumed it was his closet, but I could be wrong. Maybe he's just scrounging around people's closets looking for Japanese GameCube games.
Maybe. I don't know what he does in his spare time.
He makes podcasts, John. That's what he does in his spare time. We talked about this before recording.
Yes.
So the games in question are PC Genjin, which is bonk for the GameCube. This is Hudson released budget series they put out on the GameCube, and this is a port of bonk.
Nice.
A Japanese copy of Beach Spikers from AM2. We talked about them last week. Why a Japanese copy? Why does Johnny have a Japanese copy of Beach Spikers, a game that very much came out in the West? I have no idea, but he did. I have to put it in past tense now, because now the question is, why does James have a Japanese copy of Beach Spikers, which very much came out in the U.S.?
Why didn't James have a Japanese copy of Beach Spikers?
Because when I bought Japanese GameCube games in Japan, I wasn't looking for games that came out in the West.
Hmm.
And then Chaos Field Expanded Edition, which I haven't touched yet. Chaos Field is a weird game in and of itself. It's a shooter. But I want to say like it had a bunch of releases. I think it did come out on the GameCube in the West as well. I want to say it had like Works on Wii sticker on it when it finally came out or something weird like that. But yeah, so he sent me three Japanese games, two of which came out in the West. But that's okay, because they're games I didn't own, so that's fine. So I spent most of the time last night streaming Beach Spikers. Because I figured, like, of the three, this is the most game. Like, Chaos Field is a bullet hell. PC Genjin is bonk. And this is volleyball. We'll try that. And fun thing about that game, it's got three modes. It's got an arcade mode, which is just... It's 2-on-2 beach volleyball. It's got an arcade mode, which is just you control both of the players against two AI. It's a tournament ladder. You pick a country, and then you run through a tournament bracket. And then at the end, you face the champions, which are the Americans, which is weird because I was the Americans, except they're wearing a tinfoil bathing suits, so like reflective surfaces and like weird future sunglasses.
Now, are they Speedos or Bermuda shorts?
They are. I mean, they're...
I need a clear mental picture here.
It's only women. So it's women's. It's generally speaking, women's two-piece bathing suits.
Ah, okay.
Okay, I'm picturing it now.
Yeah. So I bet. I talked about it on the stream. This came out right around the same time as Outlaw Volleyball, and one of the Dead or Alive beach volleyball games. There was this weird like confluence of volleyball games in the early 2000s. This is by far the most tame of the trio. But the weird thing about the arcade mode is just that weird ending of like, oh, by the way, you're playing the Americans and they are from Future Cop. And they're actually pretty good. It took me a while to get the game down. The controls are a little bit strange. And you have to kind of understand how volleyball is played, all about the set, the pass, and the kill. So like all those mechanics and figuring out how to control where the ball goes. The button, it's really arcadey. It's really only three face buttons to control the action and the control stick. But figuring out how they all kind of work together takes some doing. But the main bulk of the time I spent with the game, I beat the arcade mode. But the main bulk of the time I spent was, what do they call it, like World Challenge mode or something like that? It's basically the equivalent of the story mode. And in it, you create your character from a character creator. So you pick their country, you pick their face, you pick their hair, their uniform. You do, like, you can play with their eyes, skin tone, all that stuff. And then you name them. The chat suggested I name them Sarah from Iowa City. We just went with Sarah, just because I only have 8 characters to work with.
Well, and besides, you might get sued by the real Sarah from Iowa City. So, you know, using your likeness.
I'll get sued by myself? Is that what's going to happen, Jeff?
What? You tell me what?
Yeah, I know.
What next? Santa Claus isn't real? Give me a break.
Kids, leave the room. We'll give you a minute. So created Sarah, and then I had to create her partner, which is this weird process of you're creating your partner like it's a, you know, genetic experimentation. Needed a name. Wanted to name after John, since of course John is the object of Sarah's email. So instead, I just named it Miss Lynn because that was all the character set allowed. And then it asks you to put stat points in. So you don't have stat points. You're just as good as you play, but your AI character does have stat points. So like awareness, their passing skill, their setting skill, their attack skill, their defense, how good they are at blocking, all that stuff. And so she starts at 1 across the board. You get 4 points to distribute at the start. And then after every match, you get to give them points. And the amount of points you get to give is based on how well you played. Miss Lynn is probably the worst fucking volleyball player in the history of the world. And like, to a degree that it actually became the joy of the game was how bad she was. At regular intervals, she would get hit by the ball and not attempt to do anything to it. She would just fucking hit her. And it would fall to sand, and we'd lose a point. I lost every round for the first 6, I think, until I finally had enough stats that she wasn't completely incompetent. Just mostly. And then we played, I think it was the French team, who were also terrible. And we just had a terrible off, and I was the survivor. But the real joy of Beach Spikers is this is a early 2000s Sega AM2 arcade game. And it is full of product placement. Now, here's what I mean. When you start the tour mode, and I should have caught this because during the opening, which we did stream, there's all these trademarks at the bottom, but I didn't pay any attention to that because I was still trying to remember how to hack your Wii so it would, you know, play import games. And so we get on the first course, and immediately behind the team we're playing against is a giant can of Pringles. And I say giant, I mean multiple stories tall. Waving back and forth.
Volleyball
in the stands.
And Pringles go hand in hand. Don't you know that?
There are ads all around the arena that have Pringles. And then behind me, you know, the head from the Pringles can. Mr. Pringle, I suppose his name is?
I think so, yes.
It's 3 of them on a pole bouncing up and down. Separately, separate poles. So its head just up and down behind you in the stands.
Wouldn't it have been more entertaining to just play as that face, like, or put it on, you know, one of your girls and just
it might you can put in a virtual cop and you get police bikinis, which just has the word police on them, and you get police sunglasses. But yeah, that would have been entertaining. It was, to be fair though, it was pretty fucking entertaining.
Okay.
So we fail our way through that event. It's like a 2-day tournament. We fail our way through that event, and then we go to the next event on the calendar, and it's just Coke everywhere. Not cocaine, Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola signs. Coca-Cola.
Again,
like, whole
mental image readjustment here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole different arena. Like they built a whole different arena, but there's Coke ads everywhere, and then in the corner is a giant, I'm gonna say, the size of a small building Coke can that's rotating. Like a multi-story building just rotating. It's bizarre. The chat at this point has decided that as America, which is the team we were playing as, we are playing for the honor of Lord Coke. It became this weird, like, self-deprecating jingoism for a bit in our chat. Kia, not Kia, Nissan made an appearance. There was a Holiday Inn-themed volleyball course, which is probably the strangest promotion I've seen in a video game ever.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
It's up there. There was some athletic equipment. There was one of those. I was like, yeah, that's boring. But there's like 13 fucking stages, and they're all themed after a promotional consideration. It's really weird.
Yeah.
And I
pretty heavy-handed, too, from the sound.
Oh, it's super heavy. But like maybe that's authentic. Maybe if you're deep into the beach volleyball circuit, they go like, oh, it's Pringles as the advertiser this week. I love when they advertise.
I mean, it's kind of like racing. I mean, there's always like placards and kind of billboards and stuff around. But I mean, it's usually just like around the, you know, the kind of the boundaries of the volleyball court.
I mean, it was that, too.
You know? Yeah, but like, there's not like a huge, like, you know, three-story can of Coke.
Why not?
I don't know. I don't know.
Why not?
I can petition for it.
Like, would you? I would be on board. Who do you petition for that? Is there the government? Like, I demand that Lord Coke be represented at all beach volleyball events.
I am assuming that there is a volleyball governing body that I would petition strongly with stern words. I want Lord Coke.
So I'm looking at a shot of a beach volleyball course right now. I see Red Bull, Mikasa, who were one of the advertisers in the game when I played it. So maybe this is actual Red Bull. Maybe these were, you know, the advertisers of volleyball at the time. Old Spice, which I would not have been shocked at all if Old Spice showed up by the end of that video. Like maybe this is it. Maybe these are the actual people who advertise during volleyball. So. There's Wilson. There's a giant volleyball behind them. So maybe this is authentic.
Maybe your problem was with volleyball culture itself, James.
Maybe I'm a volleyballist. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you who also hates volleyball, Miss Lynn. She's fucking terrified of it. She ran away from it at one point. That was really funny.
Yeah. Well, she's only there because her family put her up to it.
Oh, okay. That's dark. It's particularly dark, John.
Volleyball's a dark sport, man.
Volleyball, the blood sport.
You didn't want to go there.
But I will say, this game's actually surprisingly fun. In spite of a little bit of jankiness, the physics are, we'll call them less than reliable. But there's definitely a good arcadiness to it that I enjoyed. And the bad play of my partner was actually part of the comedy. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Pringles and Coke and Nissan. It's everywhere you want to
be. Who doesn't? Yeah. Those are all good brands, yeah.
Who doesn't enjoy the fine taste of Coke after eating some delicious Pringles that they drove their fantastic Nissan, It's What Moves You, to get?
Was someone drinking a Coke?
Yes.
I did.
Holy shit.
I did pop one during the stream because I had to at that point.
I should take a picture.
It's true. Well, I mean, promotional considerations, please. We'll take them. We'll take your money. We'll say whatever you want us to say about your product if you pay us.
This is
whatever
true.
Your product is.
I've said repeatedly, I've been on sale for years.
Sarin, it's not that bad. Promotional considerations provided by Sarin.
It'll make it quick.
It can't be any weirder than that. It can't be any weirder than the Retronauts guys hawking something with that promises to have neuronutrients. I mean, if you listen to the ad version of that podcast, there was some weird shit going on. It's pretty surreal.
Lambskin, it's vegan. I'm sorry. Wait, that might do it. That might be pretty surreal. Anyway, so that game's actually pretty good. Turns out Sega AM2 can make a good arcade game. So to answer our email from last week, if you want to know what's coming up on the arcade game front, go back to the far-flung future of 2002 and buy this import GameCube game that actually came out in the West. The other game I played was PC Genjin. It's bonk, but it's absolute fucking shit.
Really?
So it looks like a bad Unity game.
Oh.
Like,
okay.
It looks atrocious. And there's two... It kind of looks like Yoshi's Story, but on GameCube. Without the good art direction.
Okay. For whatever reason, I thought that they were sprites, that they were, hand-drawn and... Oh.
There are some sprites in the stage, but it's mostly really shitty low-poly 3D models.
Hmm.
So if you don't know, Bonk, it was NEC's mascot during the console wars that they lost, that they very, very lost.
Yeah.
And he made appearances in lots of games. Hudson, I mean, he wasn't there. Hudson owns him, but you know, he's a platformer. His gimmick is that he's a caveman and that he hits things with his head. So he doesn't jump on people. He jumps and then head stomps them, or he just, as the name would imply, bonks his head on them, and kills them. He eats meat and turns into a monkey. All kinds of weird shit like that. And it's all set in caveman days with dinosaurs, historical accuracy aside. 2D platformer, all that kind of stuff. And I actually had Bonk on the Game Boy, and I really liked it as a kid. Like, I really enjoyed that game. It was hard but fair. This game is not hard or fair. It's just, it's not hard, and then it'll randomly be incredibly unfair. There's a boss that I stopped playing the game and restarted just to hoard lives to go fight it. Because if you lose your life in a boss fight, you just continue where you just continue the fight there until you're out of lives, and then you get taken back to the checkpoint. So I got to that boss with like 14 lives and just brute forced it. It is like Yoshi's Story in another way. You collect badly drawn sprites of fruit to get extra lives. Hmm. You have to collect all the fruit in the stage. But yeah, it's a. I'll hold on. You know what? I'm gonna break chat protocol here. There's a picture of Bonk. I want you guys to describe what you're looking at, because this is what the game looks like all the time. Bearing in mind, this was up-res to HD when I was playing it. Or rather, it was on an HD set.
Why does it look like that?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't. That's the answer I have for you. I don't know.
Looks like an eShop game from
the 3DS.
Yeah, from when the requirements for an office space and all that stuff just went away. And like my first video game. Yeah.
It's really upsetting, because I really like, because Bonk has really good art.
Yeah, like it does. Like all of the games on TurboGrafx-16, they look pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. So, for comparison, like, so it's a remake. So, like, you can actually do shot-for-shot comparisons. And
I just don't understand why they would think that they would use that style of, you know, that fabric style of background. That doesn't mesh with that whole Bonk at all.
The aesthetic of that game.
Yeah.
But, like, why would they do... like 3D. So I sent these guys the exact same shot from the original TurboGrafx game and the GameCube remake. And like, wow, it's bad. Like, that's a really bad comparison.
Wow,
it looks
yeah.
worse than I would have rather played a ROM of this on the disc.
That looks really terrible.
Bonk is kind of floaty. He's always kind of floaty, but he feels floatier on this, and you have to play it with either the analog stick or the GameCube D-pad. This is like a bad choice and a worse choice. This is. I was gonna make a Sophie's Choice joke, but that's really, really over the bounds.
It's been done by the show before. I think
before
our time. I mean, even that was the first time it was done.
Yeah. So, but it's a disappointing experience, to say the least, and it's a bummer because Bonk is dead. The mm-hmm. Hudson Selections, which were these GameCube games that they put out.
I hope they make sure that all of that stuff ends, because I'm not sure if all of the Turbo Graphics games are having a weird sort of second life on Wii U at the moment. Like, they're trickling them out like slowly for the Western mm-hmm. territories anyway. I guess they've been there for a while in Japan, but I hope most of that stuff escapes before the, you know, because otherwise they'll sort of disappear with the Wii Shop channel.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the TurboGrafx is it's such a neat system. Like, because we talked about, you know, arcadey games. Like, it had a bunch of really, really arcadey games.
Mm-hmm. Lots of shmups.
Yeah.
And
weird platformers. And just because a big part of it was it just wasn't as powerful as its competitors at the time.
Yeah.
And so, like, it couldn't do some of the stuff those games were doing.
Yeah, I guess it's strange because it had quite a long life when you think of the add-ons and stuff. Like, you know, when it first came out, it was before Mega Drive would have launched in Japan, but like close to it. So, you know, for a time, I guess, you know,
87 is when the TurboGrafx came out.
Yeah,
in Japan.
Exactly. So at that stage, it's like, yeah, well, you know, the TurboGrafx, well, PC Engine, as it was there, version of something like Gradius is, you know, a lot closer to the arcade than the NES or the Famicom could manage. But yeah, latterly, obviously, you know, the other machines started overtaking it, and then they kind of compensated for that. Well, it sort of went down the Super Graphx route, which was aborted, you know, a more powerful platform.
Turbo Duo. And
then you had the CD add-ons and all. And it ended up, you know, if you think about some of the late games like Rondo, I mean, it had quite a full and productive life, despite never being that popular anywhere, but it had a sort of particular kind of niche with, especially with the whole shoot 'em up crowd back in the late 80s, early 90s.
I've always wanted a PC Engine Super Graphx, mostly because it looks like trash. It looks like a set dressing from a laser tag arena of the mid 90s. It's absolutely horrible looking. And for whatever reason, I find it kind of endearing how bad it is. But I still have to get this specially designed Turbo CD for it. And at some point, like, I just can't. And of course, they made a second CD version because I think that one, some of there's not, like, they went down the Sega hole before Sega did, of just like, make this thing incompatible with itself in a million different ways and weirdo fucking SKUs and all that shit. So, poor Hudson. He's trapped on this system and now also trapped in Konami's death embrace.
Yep. The graveyard.
The we'll call it Konami's murder suicide that they carried out on Hudson.
Yep.
It's sad. But still have to go and play Chaos Field. And I have a couple games that I bought when I was in Japan that I actually never had messed with, so that'll be fun.
But I just want to be clear, you streamed these last night during one of the better World Series games that's taken place for a while. And
I have multiple screens, Greg.
Yeah, I'm just hoping you managed to enjoy it rather than spending it playing beach volleyball and the bonk game that you hated.
I had probably not as much as if I had just watched the game, but I had multiple screens going, and I had the game. I very much had the game on.
Good.
Because, like, yeah, absolutely. That was good. That was a good game. And as the closest thing to a baseball fan on this show, yeah, I've watched both of those games. But anyway. Big diversions because big GameCube games with little to say about them. John, speaking of buying things of dubious value,
such
as import Western released games.
Yeah. So I pre-ordered the Super NES edition of the new 3DS XL, which I guess is an Amazon exclusive?
Yes.
Yeah. So I saw that.
How many acronyms are in that name?
Oh, too many. And it comes with Super Mario Kart preloaded, which I thought was cool. So that kind of gets over. Usually, I mean, one of the things that always holds me back from picking up a new 3DS XL is the fact that, no, it never comes with any games, you know? Even the ones that are, like, even the Samus one that was just put out. It's like $200, and you don't get any games with it at all. Not that Super Mario Kart is really worth anything, but at least it's something.
I'm about to say, that game is old as shit, John.
Yes, it's old as shit. I know.
It's retroactively named Mario Kart 1. Like, yeah. The Xbox is now OG Xbox.
Yeah.
Do we call it OG Mario Kart? Can we do that?
OG Mario Kart.
I'm sure there's people who do. I don't think that's not the same thing as saying you should.
When I'm hanging out with my homies, I'm just like, yo, OG Mario Kart, you know? What up, bro?
John, a Fortune 500 company used the expression OG to describe their first console release. How do you feel about that?
Hey, it's a gangster-ass console, you know? All right. Anyways, yeah, so I don't really...
That's leader in the clubhouse for title.
Gangster-ass console.
So anyways, yeah, so about my pre-order, I don't really know how I feel about it because I kind of look at this thing and I kind of love it because I kind of love the Super NES. I would say it's my favorite console of all time. But I think it's kind of hideous at the same time, so I don't really know.
Oh, it's terrible!
I don't know if my pre-order is actually going to hold.
Let's be clear, so this is the as you might expect, the purple North American design for the North American market and all. Where do you stand on that whole thing, by the way?
I'm not head over heels in love with the Japanese version of the Super NES. It's cool. I have always thought that the North American Super NES was kind of ugly.
Yeah,
I kind of like purple, but I kind of don't. Like, I'm kind of just like, I'm kind of neutral, but at the same time, when I really look at it, I'm like, it's kind of hideous. I don't really know why they made it. Like, looking back, I don't know why they made it that color. It's the weirdest choice.
There's two things in play here. One, purple and gray contrast really well with one another, but they don't look garish next to each other. So that's probably a part of it. But the thing about the Famicom, the Super Famicom rather, not less so the Famicom, it just reminds me of every piece of tech in Japan from like 1993. Mm-hmm. Like they all kind of use that color palette. The button layout's very similar. Like it looks like the machine they used to stamp my train ticket when I got my rail pass.
I mean, there's probably a little bit of that in the original PS1 as well. That kind of gray color, that sort of just very dull kind of color palette.
And like
the PlayStation did start off as an add-on to the Super Nintendo. It only makes sense, really.
Yeah, yeah. There are like six shades of gray on the Super Famicom. It's kind of outrageous. But I'm looking at the Super Nintendo three-dimensional DS dual system extra large that John bought. I missed a new in there somewhere. The Super Nintendo Entertainment System new three-dimensional dual screen extra large that John bought. Jesus Christ, John, what the hell did you just buy?
I kind of hate it, but I kind of love it though.
It's terrible, but maybe in this way that's like, oh, so when it's closed, all you see is the iconic front half of a Super Nintendo. So power and reset are just on the hood, the fake eject button is on there.
It's kind of, it's awful, but at the same time, I'm strangely drawn to it.
It's,
I can't explain it.
John is moth to a flame here.
I don't know, man.
where are we putting it with that NES one that had just a really terrible controller sort of decal on it?
That was bad. That was bad.
I think this is probably worse.
That's why
I put my money down for it.
Here's the thing about the NES one, which was absolute shit. Absolute fucking shit. The NES one looked like it was a fan art thing. It was like somebody customized. It looked like a fucking decal that somebody slapped on a white 3DS.
Yeah, to be fair, I'm pretty sure.
That's probably what it was.
Well, to be fair, I think most of the time, I'm assuming stuff that gets shared online gets shared because it's good. But most of the time, when you see the hobbyist stuff, it's better than that. So I'm not sure I can go along with you.
It doesn't even. Here's why the NES one is so bad. One, it doesn't actually look like the controller because there's like weird extra outlines to try to create three dimensionality in the image. Mm-hmm. Two, it's not the shape of the system, so there's just big gaping white space around it. And three, like, because the 3DS is beveled, it too is beveled when one of the defining features of that fucking controller is that everything is a right angle.
Yeah.
Ergonomics be damned. Like, it looks wrong. It looks cheap. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah, now, I will say that I'm just looking at the 3DS XL, the NES edition of it, and it is ridiculous that it has on the front of it, like the B and A button, like it has the controller. Like, it's just silly. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it looks like a sticker somebody bought off DeviantArt and slapped it on the fucking thing.
Yeah,
and they're not where the buttons are. Like, what's the point? It's so dumb. I'll say one thing about the new 3DS with the Super Nintendo decal on it. It might actually be a positive thing because the paint job on the new 3DS is kind of bad. Especially the backplate. I've known several people, including myself, who like it just ended up peeling off.
I only belt sanded it twice. I don't understand.
Yeah, no, but seriously, like just from usage, just from not even especially sweaty hands. So
yeah,
if I don't know, maybe the non-reflective paint on the back panel will now hold better. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that as well. That, and especially on the edges, like on the corners of it, tends to wear off really easily.
I really thought for a second you were going to say, I've heard that. I heard that just now from you. I avoided this problem by getting faceplates, by getting the superior new 3DS model.
Yeah, well, I lost my first new 3DS, and when I got one, I just ended up getting a... Yeah, a case for it, not to protect it from dropping it, but to protect it from my hands from peeling off, you know.
To protect it from bathtubs?
Yeah, well, also. That goes without saying.
Yeah, that's...
Does it, though?
Whenever I use my Virtual Boy, I have to put it in a giant plastic bag.
That plastic bags are for suckers. You got
it. I like that the plastic bag is the problem, not the idea that I'm playing the Virtual Boy in the bath.
Hey, look, it's supposed to be portable. It's supposed to be playable anywhere. If I can't play it in the bathtub without protection, what's the point? Just overall, what's the point of it?
Do I have to make the obvious gag that you was actually playing epic Kevin Costner adaptation Waterworld in the bath?
I was putting it out there. That was
some sort of role play.
This was fucking T-ball, and you guys were like, I was like, come on, somebody take it, please. Mm. No, John's like, bags are for suckers. I carry everything in my hands, no matter how much I've got. My groceries, I put them on my back, and I carry them out. Oh my God, what the fuck are we doing? So are you gonna? You're going to commit to this, right?
I don't know, man. I'm still on the fence. But,
what
man.
3DS number is this for you?
What 3DS number? Well, this would be my third.
Okay, so you got a close to launch unit.
Yeah, and then I got a replacement one when that one died, and I got that one back. So I have like basically two of the OG red 3DSs.
Nice. Oh. They actually sent you because you didn't buy.
No. I pulled some strings with Neil and I said, "Hey, Neil, can you talk to Nintendo PR and get them to send me out a."
Oh, that's
a
right,
unit.
Because this is the show where everybody gets stuff.
That's the way. That's the way.
Totally
Nintendo,
that.
You know,
Nintendo
that's the
PR. If you're listening,
I can be bought. I mean, I give good reviews to Nintendo games because they give me free shit. There you go. What do you want me to say?
I will give Mario Party Top 100 a 16 out of 10 if you
Everything
send it to John Lindemann.
Everything is an absolute delight. It's an absolute delight.
If you send
delight,
it to John,
those words can be bought.
It will be an absolute delight for me. John's going to be playing Top 100, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
All of them. Delights.
All right.
Across the board.
All right. Guillaume.
I've got a few games that I've played, and they kind of all end up falling under the Halloween category, more or less. The first one is, you know, kind of, you know, the lame option, Castlevania. Like, it's not very Halloween-y, and it's usually what I end up playing and talking about because I'm a wuss and I don't play scary games. So I played Super Castlevania on the Super Nintendo Classic, and it's the first time that I've ever beaten it. I've actually finished the first NES Castlevania on the Wii, so, you know, without cheating, really, there's no save state or anything on that system. So I look back at that, and then I look at just how much trouble Super Castlevania gave me, and I'm not sure how I did it. And
is the old atrophy of skill question. It's like, am I just a lot worse now?
But there's also, I think, like the patience. Although I did get also.
I think that's
super...
That's usually the bigger part of it. Is just that, you know, you like to think, oh yeah, I sailed through this when I was younger, and it's like, no, You just had the time to failing enough times to do it.
You banged your head against that wall.
Yeah, well, when I beat NES Castlevania, I wasn't editing a podcast, I didn't have a girlfriend, and I didn't really have a life, so that helped. Now...
You know what you need to do.
I still don't have a life, but I've got two out of three, and so I don't really feel like banging my head against a game over and over again. But also, like, there's something... I don't know, maybe I just kind of enjoy certain... NES, franchises that originated on NES more on the NES than their Super Nintendo kind of follow-ups. The Super Nintendo, it looks great. The music is fantastic. Just like that first, the first time that the theme comes on in that first level, it's just like I cranked up the volume. And then for whatever reason, one of the stages had kind of a jazzy flute, so I turned it back down. But,
boo! Boo, sir! Boo!
Not a big fan. Not a big fan of jazz. But yeah, it was good to have the SNES Classic and having that rewind function, which got really a workout during the second half of the game, I gotta say.
Did you have a controller with a home?
I ended up switching the SNES Classic's controller with the Wii U, the Wii Pro controller. And so I was just like, okay, home button, rewind. It was, the process is a little bit cumbersome, but it's still better than getting up to reset the console every time. I don't know. I'm glad I finished it. I'm glad it's behind me. And I don't mind too much that I had to I didn't beat it honorably, I suppose. I don't have anything to prove.
Funny. I mean, my kind of impressions of it, and this is a tough one because I played Castlevania as a very small child and then Castlevania 4 as a slightly older child. I know them both like the back of my hand, so it's, and I've replayed them many times since and all that, so it's very difficult for me to look through it, through anybody else's eyes in that respect. But in most regards, I kind of think of Castlevania 4 as a much more forgiving game.
And yet, I think that, I don't know, the 8-way whip gives you a false sense of security, it makes you feel like, oh yeah, like if there's something coming from slightly overhead, I can just whip diagonally up and it's going to be fine. But it turns out that death's sights come from every direction at once. So, you whip one of them out of the air.
Some of the bosses towards the end, I feel like kind of up the ante a bit, the kind of little rush that you get right towards the end are quite tricky. Some of them are just, you can pretty much just attack indiscriminately, and if you do it quickly enough, you'll probably have got there with some modicum of health, you'll probably be fine. But yeah, I mean, in general, you look at the 8-directional whipping, you look at the way it handles the stairs and stuff, and the amount of control you've got over the jumps, and it adds up to what feels like a much more forgiving game. But I couldn't really kind of disentangle my familiarity of the game with how much more forgiving the design is at this point, because I just know it by heart, so I couldn't.
Yeah, well, a lot of the things that kill me without, they're kind of cheap in that the first time that you come across them, there's no way that you can survive. And then on subsequent runs through the level, that you know what to expect.
Yeah, so I'm sure. It's like the first time that I saw that stuff was in 1991. I can't.
Yeah, and it's just like, I think that the rewind feature mostly saved me from doing the same sections of levels over and over again.
Yeah, that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned. I feel like that's not that, BS or whatever, because I don't know whether there's that much. I mean, I guess there's a certain amount of Castlevania is like chaining together, good performance, but less so than like a shoot 'em up or something. I kind of feel like you're not absolutely breaking the game at that juncture. There's definitely some gotcha stuff in 4 that I even sticks out in my memory.
Well, there's a few spots where it's very unclear what can kill you. For instance, the first time that there's a stage that rotates around you, like you latch on to one of those hooks with your whip, and then the stage just turns slowly. And
very
then
slowly.
Yeah, very slowly. And then there's a platform for you to stand on, and it kind of looks like maybe you can jump into this hole a little bit past a series of spikes. You can't. You're supposed to wait there, kill a bunch of Medusa heads, and then wait until the room starts turning again. There's, I don't know. And then it's unclear like when you can let go or not. And then the platform slowly extends to right below your feet. But if you were impatient and didn't wait until then, like there's a chance you might have thought, okay, I think it's safe. What? No, it's not. That and towards the end, like there's a series of platforms that fly up diagonally and they bring right into spikes that you can't really see coming because the camera is not showing you those spikes until it's too
late.
And
it's forcing you to kind of go, you're worried about, sort of keeping pace. So
yeah.
You're forcing it upwards and then, you're going to... You get that.
Yeah, so I played that, and then I also got from the library Binding of Isaac, which is this phenomenon that I don't really understand. We mentioned it briefly when we talked about roguelikes. So it's the game that's kind of meant to be played through over and over again, and a few things are going to change, like the weapons that you're going to get change. So it's a game that is designed to, that you can play over and over again. It's just not a game that I want to play over and over again. So I returned it pretty quickly. Mostly, like, you're just, like, it seems to be, at least in the beginning, a series of just very small rooms where you have to clear of enemies. And then that opens the next doors to go through the next room to clear the enemies. And it's kind of a four-way twin-stick shooter. So you can only shoot in the four cardinal directions, and you're shooting your tiers, which, do not, they don't aim very well. It's not exactly a spray, but like it just, I don't know. It's not very precise. I didn't really take to it. And, the kind of the lack of precision, I think, killed it in many ways for me, because like I faced a boss where it was like, basically like this giant head that would sometimes just spit droplets of blood at me. And the blood droplets hurt you, and they have a pretty good range, and they have an arc, and they only hit you when they're at ground level. So you can not get hit by a droplet of blood that goes, like, if the sprite is over you, but actually, like, the droplet is above you, you're not getting hit. The problem is that there's no shadow or anything to indicate how far from the ground those droplets are. Like, it's kind of guesswork. So it's just like, okay, like, I guess, like, I'm going to try to avoid all the droplets, but there's so many of them that you can't really tell. That you can't really, like, it's very difficult to avoid them all. And it's just kind of a crapshoot if you get hit by them or not. So, I don't know. And it's this very, kind of gory, disgusting game. And, some of the items that you can get is like cancer. It's got this weird sense of humor that I just don't understand. So, yeah, I brought that back pretty quickly. And the last game that I want to talk about is Costume Quest, which Costume Quest 2, which I got on the Wii U. I saw in my feed Joe Forham, this journalist that I follow on Twitter, talked about finishing it and just how, like, short and sweet the experience was. And, I have played Costume Quest 1 years ago, and I really enjoyed it. And... So yeah, I was like, well, yeah, like, it's probably around the right time to play Costume Quest 2. So I downloaded it on a Wii U, and that was a mistake. Like, my reasoning was, well, the Wii U is still attached, is still connected to the TV. It's still kind of, whereas my laptop is not always connected to the TV, so it would be more convenient to just purchase it and play it on a Wii U. But turns out that the Wii U port of Costume Quest 2 is broken in a fairly significant way. Costume Quest is kind of this mini RPG, like maybe 10 hours long. It's very funny. It's by Double Fine. It's got great, you know, great sense of humor, great dialogue, and really cute characters. And you're basically like this trio of kids who are wearing costumes or, you know, going around for Halloween. And when you get in combat, then during the fight sequences, you become your costume. And so, you know, like you might be wearing a superhero costume and it's kind of crummy looking, but then like you get into the fight scene and you're an actual kind of like Mr. Incredible. And, you know, you pick up buses and throw them at enemies, and it's pretty cool. And during the fights, the fight system is very much like the Mario RPGs, where there's a timing element to it. So, you know, you can hit harder if you press the button again after an attack at the right time, right before you hit the enemy, to, you know, that makes you hit harder. And there's like even like subsequent hits after that, where if you time it another time, like just, you know, perfectly right again, then you can get a second hit in there. So it's very, you know, like timing based. It's very important to press the button at the right time. And the Wii U version has frame rate problems. It doesn't make the game unplayable, but the game just reliably skips like a whole lot of frames during the animation where it shows you when you're supposed to press the button again. So at least it seems to be like the technical hiccups seem to be consistent enough that once you kind of get the timing right, you can repeat it. So it's not, you know, the game is not unplayable. But I would still consider, you know, the game just, to be broken a very significant way.
It's
you
just
know?
Unbearable.
Well, yeah, like imagine like you're playing Guitar Hero and, you know, half the time, like the highway of notes is just like frozen. And you kind of have to know that you're supposed to play a certain note at a certain time. You know,
God,
like it's just the game is very well made in other ways. It's just that this port is not the way to go. So if anyone, for whatever reason, is still downloading games on their Wii U, well, reconsider this one and maybe try it on some other platform. The thing is, though, I'm not sure if it plays that much better on other platforms. Like, I'm sure that on the PC, it's, you know, if you've got a powerful PC, it's probably fine. But the first Costume Quest I played on PS3, which also had kind of, I don't know, frame rate hiccups sometimes with certain third-party games. And I think that, you know, the performance was not really quite that good either in the first game on the PS3. So read the reviews first and make the right choice.
Make the right choice. Mm. That's a hell of a sign off, Guillaume.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, you know, play this game. Just
don't
do
play
better
this
than
game.
I did. Well, you know, make better life choices than I do. Shouldn't be that hard.
Words we can all live by.
Mm-hmm.
Craig, help me.
Okay. Yeah. A quick thing I want to mention about there's a on the spooky theme. There's a Halloween sale. Quite a broad range of games on sale across all the Nintendo platforms over here. And a quick little thing I want to mention is that there are some cases where you've got a discounted price because of this sale, but simultaneously there's like a discount you can get on My Nintendo, and Ooh. Those discounts will stack. I should say, because where it won't stack is if they say they put one of these sales where it's like, oh, My Nintendo members can get this game for, you know, a special price, and then like there's also a separate My Nintendo promotion that 40 gold coins or something gets you, you know, some extra percentage off. Those won't stack because it's two My Nintendo offers, and that doesn't, you know, that they can't coexist or whatever. But if the price is just reduced in general,
fight to the death,
not conditional on you having connected, linked a My Nintendo account to your eShop and all that stuff, then they will stack. So there's a few, obviously not many cases of that because there's never that many My Nintendo rewards, but one that I took advantage of was the digital version of Pandora's Tower. I owned that game before. I played through it. We did a retroactive on it some years ago, but you know, to have it digital, I thought, yeah, for like £7.50, I thought, yeah, I'll take that. And then I think like Majora's Mask N64 is another one where you could have a compound discount. So, and then there's plenty of other cool stuff that's on sale. You know, your Castlevanias, your Ghouls and Ghosts, Ghosts and Goblins, or and then other stuff that's more tenuously linked to Halloween. But one notable omission, Demon's Crest. Now, I already own Demon's Crest, so I don't, you know, it's not for my purposes. But it's like,
but do you own it on new 3DS?
I don't. No, that's true. I own it on Wii U. You know, it's a fair point. I might have bought it. Yes, they put it on Switch. But no, I mean, seems a bit sad to me. You know, they got Gargoyle's Quest, Gargoyle's Quest 2, Ghosts of Goblins, Super Ghouls of Ghosts. Both versions of Super Ghouls of Ghosts, the Super Nintendo and the GBA one. wow. And the new 3DS Super Nintendo one. But no, the Demon's Crest left out. Was it just forget.
Ours is much less exciting to look at.
I think, isn't it just like, I think the Switch stuff is the same, you know, in America as it is here. But yeah, then it's like, but over here we've got loads of things, like all the Castlevania games you could think of, you know, Makomura games, and then like, you know, more recent stuff too. And yeah, so it's cool. So it doesn't happen that often that you have a sale this sweeping.
Shovel Knight's on sale though.
Yeah.
20% off.
The full package and Spectre Knight on Switch.
Yeah. That's a good deal. You should get that.
Yeah. Just, you know, makes me sad. I've already bought and played Demon's Crest. I really like it, but it's the kind of game I could see people maybe giving a chance if they saw it was on sale and they might love it. And just, why the hell isn't it on sale? Every other vaguely spooky game on Nintendo platforms is on sale. Why not that? So that's a shame. But I'll move on now to the main event, Odyssey. I've been playing it for the past few hours. I won't comment on how much progress I've made since the beginning of New Business.
I wanted you to swerve on us and go, I changed my phone to Australia and now I have Animal Crossing Camp Design or whatever it's called. I secretly was hoping we were gonna get turfed by that.
But I downloaded it at midnight and I've been enjoying it so far. I won't talk too much in specifics, even though I've really mostly played stuff that's been shown to varying degrees, although, you know, some people may have even been choosing to avoid that stuff. I mean, I ended up seeing a bit because of the Nintendo World Championships. I might not have chosen to watch in any other context, but, you know, I'd seen quite a bit of the event, so I wasn't going to just, like, skip the end. But, yeah, you know, between that and E3 and all that, like a fair amount of the stuff is things I'd seen before. But you've been sort of no less fun for it. I've played strictly in handheld mode so far, so I've not been using the motion stuff, even though it's kind of pushing you pretty hard to do that. Because like when you boot it up, it's like, try playing this with Joy-Con.
Oh god, like, I thought that was just a demo thing.
No, that when I booted up the game, it did that. I don't know whether it'll do it. I've only booted it up once, so I don't know whether it'll keep saying
does
that.
Does it shake me, Greg?
It talks about doing, you know, like spin attacks and homing attacks and stuff with Cappy by gesturing with the Joy-Con. I could get a spin out just by sort of pretending I'm trying to do a quick spin in Ocarina of Time. But I don't know about the home and stuff, but you can always just like actually aim it. There's always that. So far I haven't had any trouble with just using the regular controls and everything. Some of the sort of real basic stuff that you're kind of looking at in the early going was the camera. How that's handled, you know, after Sunshine Retroactive and all that good stuff, you know, it's it kind of looms large as that, you know, they have sort of sidestepped this problem essentially with the way they designed, you know, Galaxy and especially, you know, the 3D Land, 3D World games. So here, you know, straight away you're looking at that thinking, how well is it going to handle it? And so far, you know, it seems like a pretty good mix of, you know, you've got control over it to a reasonable extent, and you know, you just use the right stick. On the default for the sort of sensitivity was described as, I say default, but just what it was set to before I, you know, had a look at it. It said low, which is odd. Normally, the default setting is always the medium one, isn't it? You know, but I guess they were worried about people kind of feeling like a slight touch of the right stick, possibly accidental, would like fling the camera, you know, round Mario or something. But I raise that to normal, just so, you know, I feel like I've got a pretty good grip on camera control. I can handle them being a bit more sensitive. But there's a good mix of where you're going into certain contexts, the taking that control away and fixing it and giving you a good view of what you're looking at, which is, you know, exactly the kind of thing that we were wishing for when you're playing, you know, for instance, some of those floodless stages in Super Mario Sunshine. You know, that kind of where, like, there's certain parts where it's fine just to leave it to the player to decide, you know, how they want to frame it, and then other parts where it's just better to take that away and kind of have some kind of scripting so that it provides a very clear view of what you're trying to do. And so far, it seems like they got the balance pretty well cracked, but it's early on. You're not seeing, like, the more advanced stuff at this stage, so that's where it could get trickier. More advanced geometry, more tricky platforming, you know, smaller platforms, etc., etc. So obviously that's kind of, you know, to come, presumably. You can't really make that much of a judgment on that on basis of the first few hours, but it's encouraging so far. And then, you know, I like the kind of structure so far in terms of, you know, you've got this openness, but, you know, what you haven't got is the whole, like, stories or, you know, kind of that you had in Sunshine, this sort of instances of the world, these kind of individual iterations that you had before. You know, everything's open to you, more like Banjo. You know, we talked about that plenty before it came out and with Sunshine and everything. But it's kind of trying to take you on a journey to some extent. You know, James, I think, touched on this with the demo play that he had a bit of time with. In terms of, you get, you know, something's happening in the level, it shows you it, and then you've got like a beacon off in the distance. So I kind of feel there's a bit of, you know, that Zelda kind of influence here in terms of, yes, you've got this big world, but, you know, it's Zelda, it's more like you kind of do it yourself in terms of, you know, you get up high and then you put a beacon on somewhere and then you head towards it. In this case, they're kind of providing the beacon and they're also providing the opportunity to sort of capture these, like, visors and then go into them and survey the level as well. So if you're somebody that's like, okay, well, I can see the beacon over there, that's great, but let's have a look around the rest of the level and let's see if there's any kind of interesting kind of diversions that I want to go on before I generally veer that way, you could do that too. So yeah, definitely a bit of influence there, but there's a structure there, but you're welcome to go off it and find any number of moons. There's very, very many to be had for, you know, seemingly kind of random or nondescript tasks. You know, other times you'll see something in the distance and then it's like, okay, oh yeah, there's going to be a moon over there, but how do I get to it? And then as you do other things, it becomes clear and then you do it. So like I said, the fact that I think the big thing, you know, for me as somebody who's generally preferred the more structured linear 3D Marios over the open, you know, the first two, 64 and Sunshine, that were more open. What I am enjoying about this so far is just the fact that you could kind of dive into a world, go, you know, crazy in terms of just, you know, picking up moons left, right and centre, you know, more than you need to advance, comfortably more in one case. I've got to my fourth kingdom now. In the case of the third one I went to, I had about double the requirement very quickly. But that's the point, you could just keep racking them up. There's no pulling you out of it. You just
does it tell you how many are left for an area?
Well, it'll tell you how many are left to advance onto the next area. What it does, I haven't seen something yet that talks about, you know, how many more there might be. Like I said, I've comfortably exceeded that amount, and so clearly that's not, like, you know, even close to all of them.
Yeah.
And there's a character, a toad, that hangs around your base, the Odyssey itself, the hat ship, that like you can pay for hints if you try, you know, presumably at some point, if you kept tracking down his leads, he would shut up. You know, there would be no more hints. So I guess that'd be one way. For now, I've not been trying to be exhaustive before I move on, but I've definitely been like, yeah, you know, I don't have to move on yet. I've seen X, Y, and Z around the place. I want to investigate that before I leave. And then at some point kind of say, okay, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready to move on now, even though I know there's more to be found, you know, especially like the purple coins and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there's plenty more to be found in the areas I've gone through already. But, you know, like I said, it's very smooth at this juncture. That's the sort of the best part of it, I would say, is how the character movement feels like faster in its basic form. You can kind of chain together the sort of long jump and these forward rolls to move even quicker, and then you've got the capture stuff where you know, if you bullet bills and other enemies, all this different stuff, where typically you're going to move even faster again. So, you know, I mean, in one case you've got the Sand Kingdom, which I'm sure people have seen, and James, you played some of in the demo. Yeah. You have got some pretty wide open spaces there, but, you know, you can traverse them quite rapidly. But then on the other hand, like a later kingdom I've been to is much, much tighter, but you've still got a real kind of, you've got a density of things to find in it. It's still, you know, it doesn't, it still kind of feels different from one of the sort of smaller worlds back in Sunshine or 64, especially Sunshine, when there's only really going to be one thing that you're looking for in one particular iteration of that world. So the capture mechanic so far has definitely been, you know, pretty amusing with the things I've managed, you know, to find to this point. But, you know, the whole, hopefully, you know, you're just going to see a huge variety of things as the game goes on. You know, to this point, I've been dealing with, again, many of the things that people already have seen, and they are fun, but yeah, you know, not exactly revelations. And then there's boss battles. To this point, been quite a few, more than I would have thought in such a short period of time. You know, they've been sort of okay. You know, not nothing hugely kind of clever or surprising, but you know, sort of serviceable.
I guess my biggest concern would be that the captures act a little bit too much like early Kirby games, where, okay, like I captured this enemy, it's got this ability, and this ability is very obviously the solution to this puzzle over here. Do the different forms show more creativity than that, or like do they use the, I don't know, are there like enemies that you used in a very kind of unexpected way, or...
Yeah, I would. I mean, there was. Like I said, I won't get too much into specifics, because even by the time this goes out, the game wouldn't have been out for that long. You know, but you know, like there was one enemy I saw, and I was like, well, you know, if I can capture him, what the hell's he gonna do? it kind of turned into this funny little thing. But a lot of the time here, you know, in the early going anyway, especially like with capturing the bullet bills, like, yeah, there's no mystery about what you're going to do with the bullet bill. It's just a case of doing it. You know, it's like, okay, there's a expanse that, you know, there's no solid ground. So clearly Mario's not going to make it by himself. You've got to capture a bullet bill, and then you've got, you know, some kind of obstacles moving in and out. It's just a test, you know, it's just not a particularly stiff test, but a minor test of skill. You know, I don't think it's meant to, you know, sort of, it's not masquerading as a puzzle where it's like, oh, I've got to turn into the bullet bill to get past this. You know, it's just, you know, you're doing that. Like I said, that's fun because it's got, at least in the short term, because of the feeling of just, you know, especially when you pound the accelerator just how fast you feel like you're going, you know, compared to you know, what you're used to in 3D platformers.
Like, I, at this point, I'm trying to think what questions I want to ask you, but I just keep looking down at the clock instead and going, soon.
Yeah, it's kind of pointless. It's kind of redundant, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, the reviews started coming in earlier today, and there are, you know, so many are hugely positive, including Dan's on our website and all that. And, you know, I've certainly kind of done a bit of reading, but I could have done a hell of a lot more. But it just, you know, it is right at this juncture. A feeling of like, well, it's so close at hand, and it's such an exciting thing. I'm just really looking forward to, you know, diving in for myself. And that's the thing. I mean, this is, you know, more so than stuff like 3D World, 3D Land, a game predicated on discovery. So, right, yeah, I mean, like I said, yeah, you know, you're going to get into these situations where it's going to have some kind of, you know, test of your, you know, control over these particular characters or mechanics or whatever, as any Mario game would. I've seen a fair bit of the kind of 2D stuff where, you know, the kind of Link Between Worlds 8-bit kind of take. You know, there's been a fair bit of that as well, but, you know, in general, the joy in this game so far is just predicated on roaming around and discovering things rather than, you know, it being a great test of your Mario skills. And so that's definitely something that you want to find for yourself rather than, you know, seeing somebody else do it or hearing about somebody else doing it.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at right now. I have enjoyed some degree of the hyperbolicness of this release, because Nintendo has not done a whole lot themselves to promote hype. Mm-hmm. To be honest, I've seen ads for ARMS. I still see ads for ARMS. I've seen ads for Splatoon. I don't know that I've really seen much for Mario.
Well, you got the musical thing.
You do, yeah. But I'm like, I mean, like, big TV spots for some games, but this one's been kind of quiet. But then you have a review that literally came out and said 6 out of 5 stars, and it's like, okay, we've crossed into the weird zone now, so I'm good. Like, I actually really appreciate it. I wish that outlet had been on the review aggregator sites just to fuck with their equations. Because yeah, I want us to enter this dark realm where people start, like, shadow realming their games to 36 out of 10 just to fuck up review averages.
Yeah, the only middling review I've seen said that it was too easy. That was the...
It's interesting. I mean, in the early stages, you'd expect it to be easy. You know, so we'll, you know, that what I've played is not going to cast any kind of light on that subject. But, you know, like I said, I do like, you know, my Mario games with some challenge. Like, those often are some of the lasting memories I have. Obviously, it's nice if it's for the right reasons, mm-hmm. unlike certain parts of Sunshine. But, you know, like, yeah, definitely you think of... you know, getting absolutely everything in, you know, sort of like a Galaxy 2 or the sort of the second loop in Super Mario 3D Land and stuff like that. That's a nice level of challenge, you know, that's what you'd like to see. Where, you know, again, though, that was generally for people who wanted to get everything. You know, seeing the credits would generally not be that difficult. So I will have to see about, you know, if there's more challenge to be found in the game if you're somebody that really wants it. Because I would hope so, because I said I've usually enjoyed those sorts of components to past Mario games, you know, playing as Luigi in Galaxy and the Green Stars, stuff like that. I love that stuff. So I hope there's plenty of challenge to be had somewhere in the game. But admittedly, you know, it's a bit of a different style. It's not as, you know, about these sort of tightly constructed challenges anymore. It is, you know, more of an exploration game. And that's, you know, after having the run that we've had of the linearizing, you know, from Galaxy onwards, I'm okay with that change of pace at this juncture.
I mean, I talked about that when I talked about the demo. I got this weird, like, obviously not the same, and I made the joke that I was Dark Souls-ing it here, but like it was activating the same spots in my brain that Breath of the Wild was poking, of just like finding stuff in, like, that looks weird. I bet it looks weird for a reason. oh, hey, here's a power move.
No, it's just kind of that feeling of you know, trying to put yourself in the mindset of the, you know, well, you know, clearly, yeah, you know, this might be like a big expanse or something, but it was made, you know, it was handmade by people, and there's a reason for everything, kind of thing. And trying to think what is indicative of something, and perhaps what's just incidental.
And it's that weird dopamine feedback loop too of see thing, huh? Wonder about thing, proceed to thing, investigate thing, and surprise, you got reward, and then your brain pleasure center kicks in for a microsecond. And you're like, I need to do more of this. There's a lot of power moons too. Apparently, there's a significant number of them.
Yeah,
there's 900 of them.
So, wow, from the
900. It's the fucking Koroks. Mm-hmm. It's a game all about the Korok seeds. So, this is gonna eat up a lot of time. It's a good thing Nintendo doesn't have another big game coming out this holiday. See, oh shit.
I kind of went ahead and canceled all my other pre-orders. I can't really keep up. And
clear the deck.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Xenoblade's gonna have to wait.
Don't forget Nintendo's publishing Skyrim 3 weeks before that.
Yeah, I know. Oh no,
that's also been canceled.
I wasn't just talking about Xenoblade.
I love that they're 3 weeks apart. That is just, that's beautiful.
That is hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, the fear was that, and we talked about it when they showed the games during that presentation back in February, was that they were going to do the most boneheaded thing and do Xenoblade, and then like a week later would be Odyssey, when there's no realistic way you've beaten Xenoblade. Instead, they made a Mario game that there's potentially no realistic way you've beaten, and also squeeze Skyrim in there. Because fuck it. This is a really big reversal from last year. Remember what it was like last year in this time of year we're talking about games?
Yeah.
I think I had the... I went to a Nintendo event, like Christmas event, and I didn't play anything. I just turned back around. I'm not sure if I even stepped into the door like to get a Luigi cupcake.
You did the Grandpa Simpson thing.
Yeah.
Yep. Basically. I'm off. It was sad.
It was.
But next week, I'm going to this year's Christmas event, and it's, I don't know. Is it going to be sad? I will have had played Mario by then, so
I believe,
what else is there?
I believe Doom will be there. Skyrim will probably be there.
There will be children there. I'm not sure if Doom will be at the Canada
event. Kids gotta learn, Guillaume.
That's right. Kids. Look,
rip and tear.
I mean, obviously they're gonna end up in hell, so they gotta learn what to do when to get there.
Yep. It's true. It's an important detail.
Death skill, not life skill.
Yeah.
It always turns dark, doesn't it? Always.
It got old young.
My lifestyle,
you know,
determines my death style.
Holy God, Metallica, St. Angry and Metallica lyrics again.
All right, let's go do it for new business. I don't know. We'll probably do listener mail, or maybe you'll just hear credits music playing after this. We'll figure it out. Stay tuned, probably.
Bye.
I guess we decided to come back. So we're back. Hi, listener mail. You can send us your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I know we say this a lot, but we're going to be quick this week because Mario's coming out. So fuck it. Let's go. I have the first email, and it is from Owen, who writes, "Dear Enablers." That's fair.
That's us.
After my last email a few months ago, I realized that the likelihood of you reading my emails, no matter how dumb they were, was incredibly high. Not fair. From here, I could have gone in one of two directions. I chose to lay off sending one for a while. It seemed the healthier choice. Now, in my final year of college, and looking for some good procrastination, so I will give into my baser urges and send you another. Which is literally, he just wrote an email telling us he's going to send us an email. In my opinion, the output of Nintendo games on the Switch has been stellar for its first year, even excluding Mario + Rabbids, which they didn't develop or publish. And 1-2 Switch, which they shouldn't have developed or published. Nintendo have averaged publishing a game a month from launch to the end of the year. 5 ESD titles, Breath of the Wild, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, ARMS, Splatoon 2, and Super Mario Odyssey. 1 other first-party studio title, Xenoblade 2. 2 third-party developed but Nintendo-published Fire Emblem Warriors Pokken Tournament. And 2 Nintendo-published ports, Skyrim and Ultra Street Fighter. While this list is obviously not perfect, there are 3 ports from the Wii U and 2 games Nintendo never should have had to publish themselves. It is a very impressive amount of content when compared to previous years, and I would defend any game on that list as being a good addition to the system. Any game. My question is, how do you think Nintendo's published and developed output for 2018 on Switch will compare to this? Keep up the good work. Regards. First off, enablers is kind of harsh. We facilitators, please.
Inspirations, maybe?
I don't want people to feel inspired and be like,
get people making love, James. Making love.
Like,
sweet
officer,
love.
I know I threw a Molotov cocktail into the dollar store, but I was inspired. Don't throw Molotov cocktails in the dollar stores.
The dollar store,
or any incendiary device.
Those discounts are on fire. Please continue.
John,
talk about
2018 games on Switch.
I'm done. Yeah, I mean, I think it'll... that's the thing.
I mean, they can't do this. Like, this is...
Actually, yeah. I think they will do this. I think their output will be exactly the same with the exact same level of quality.
They're just
going to
re-release everything?
With
everything's going to be remastered?
Games? Yeah.
It's going to be the same. They're just going to re-release Mario Odyssey next October.
Well, I mean, the first thing you could do is kind of look at what we know, the early stuff based on E3. You got Kirby, which we've already seen a bit of. Yoshi, we've already seen a bit of. Kirby, which is already dated for early next year, right?
Yeah.
Yoshi's more vague. Then Fire Emblem for Switch is you know, they're committed to for next year as well. And
Pokemon.
Then you've got some of the stuff that we've either know something about or we have strong kind of suspicions. Animal Crossing, keep saying it at some point. There never was a real Wii U Animal Crossing. Surely that's going to happen at some point. We've got the mobile game finally materializing now. Do you think that the conditions would be right for that to emerge? Perhaps sooner than later next year. But I guess it depends on the development circumstances and all that. But we've got Pikmin, which was already finished ages ago.
That's right. It's basically done.
Sure. So that's a slam dunk. There's the always kind of looming thing of Smash that we've talked about plenty of times. Could we see a port of the, some sort of iteration of the game that came out on 3DS and Wii U?
Now that we've abandoned names, Super Smash Bros. Switch could be anything.
Yeah, it could be, but you kind of assume it would not be, if we're talking next year, a sort of entirely new game, given how long it takes them to get those done.
And they usually talk about those games really, really early, too.
Yes, we've got a very well sort of established history of big lead-ins and long hype cycles for the entirely new ones. But yeah, some kind of deluxe game of the year type of thing, that's possible. I'm not banking on it. We've kind of discussed that before, but certainly within the realms of the possibility. Like you said, Pokemon, typically for much of the last decade, Pokemon's been on an annual cycle. And it took a year off before Sun and Moon, but then Sun and Moon, then we get the Ultra versions this year. That end of the year, I think, would be the time for Pokemon on Switch if it's ready. But that, again, that's not something we know for sure.
Well, yeah, they themselves have said they aren't sure if it's 28 or 20 or 18 or 19. So
yeah, I could see that, but it's in play. And then I'm trying to think of Metroid Prime. I wouldn't bet on that. You know, yet I think that's probably 2019. I think we've got touched on that before. But the flip side of that is, given that Retro Studios is not making that, there's still the question of what they have.
Oh no,
been
we're
doing
in the Retro Studios prediction time.
Yeah, and they've been doing something presumably, and like fruits from that labor should be coming at some point, like in the distant future.
They're the ones who've been making Pikmin 4.
Maybe.
Can you imagine all the emails we would get if that came out that Retro was making Pikmin 4? Oh my god! Our poor inbox would be on fire!
But, I mean, you know, you look at, like I said, I don't know, you, some of those kinds of other ones where you're talking about, you know, stuff we're not sure would make it to 2018, or not even for sure that it would exist at all, like the Smash Bot or something. But you start to piece it together, and it could happen. You know, you could have a pretty damn similar pace to this past year. But the difference, presumably, would be that you'd have perhaps more, you know, autonomously generated releases that kind of fill the same kind of gaps that Street Fighter and Skyrim did this year, rather than, you know, what Nintendo kind of having to do the publishing and all that. You'd hope that, and certainly, you know, the fact that we do know that you're going to get Wolfenstein 2 early next year, for instance, things like that. It's possible that they won't have to do as much. Probable, really, with the good start that it's got off to sales-wise. Although, you know, we've seen with Wii, you know, that just having good install base numbers is not the only sort of piece of the puzzle when it comes to third-party support. And so I'm not letting the expectations get too high in that regard, but I would have thought it would be more favorable next year than it has been this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotta feel like that other third parties besides, or at least Nintendo's banking on other third parties besides, of all people, Bethesda,
you'd have to
more
think,
engaged.
Yeah, you would have to think Capcom would come in at some point with Monster Hunter.
I don't know.
Something.
I don't want to say anything too mean about Capcom, because, I mean, Matt, you know, our friend Matt works there, but, like, the fuck is going on at Capcom?
Well, I mean, he's on the Monster Hunter team, so he's good.
There's not a lot of PS4s in Japan, John. That's all I'm saying.
This is true.
But, like, yeah, that they seem to have kind of a hate boner for Switch at the moment, so who knows?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why they love stuff like Street Fighter V and stuff like Resident Evil 7 when those games really kind of underperform. And they could probably have something.
Resident Evil 7 did okay. But yeah.
But the thing
Street
is, they
five
but
NBC,
it's still underperformed because they thought it would just set sales on fire.
Yep. Then they're idiots.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Yeah.
But
what do you
mean?
Like, banking on VR technology did not pay off, even though it's not widely adopted and wasn't proven when they started working on it?
Yeah, who would have thunk it?
But regardless, like, I feel like Nintendo is probably putting some amount of bank in that, because they really, I mean, they really blew the doors out pretty hard on this one. Like, just 2017. I mean, the 2017 pace isn't sustainable.
Well, the late 2017 pace, but I wouldn't say that initially the Switch was, like, it didn't have a roaring start, I don't
know.
No,
but
maybe,
well,
like, my perception is skewed by the fact that I played Zelda on the Wii U, so I
yeah,
don't
sure,
really
that's
see
the
it
point,
as a Switch
isn't it? You're
game,
talking
but
about, but that's the point. I mean, if you're looking at the year as a whole, and saying, oh, you know, that's a strong list, part of that is kind of subsidized by Wii U, essentially, by the fact that, you know, there's this feeling that, yeah, well, you know, Mario Kart 8 sold
Pokken
relatively well on Wii U, but it was just Wii U, so yeah, we're mm-hmm. totally doing that again. Pokken, and then yeah, obviously with Zelda as well being a sort of simultaneous thing. So yeah, I mean that you won't have that in you know, well, 2018. You won't have any games that have, well, maybe Animal Crossing in a weird way, if that did materialize, you could argue has kind of been deferred from Wii U
and Pikmin, as you mentioned,
and maybe Pikmin. Yeah, so they might
what
still
if
be
comes
a little
out
bit
on Wii U.
it was done when it was still called NX, all right? So...
We told you it was done. You didn't listen to us. He thought we were lying.
But, yeah, so, I mean, there may be a little bit still of overhang from the whole, you know, basically, you know, when they realized the game was up with Wii U, and so any kind of efforts to expedite software to help that platform stopped. And, you know, it was more about how can we repurpose things, you know, to help populate the first year of the Switch. There still might be some of that bleeding into the second year, but yeah, I mean, you would, they would hope that it wouldn't have to kind of babysit it as much, if you like.
But I mean, franchise A and franchise B in the giant Nintendo game franchise vault have just blown out their
games.
Yeah,
that's the biggest thing. I mean, because like I said, we're talking about, you know, quantity of kind of recognized Nintendo stuff. You know, Kirby, Yoshi, Pikmin, Fire
right.
Emblem.
They
Animal
are
Crossing.
Not Mario and Zelda.
Yeah, I mean, Smash is kind of close to. I mean, it's all of them in a way, but it's. I mean, I guess it's most like Mario Kart, but it's not as popular.
Right.
These
but
days,
Mario Kart
so...
is out too, so that's gone. They're not going to put up Mario Kart,
like,
Mario Kart
I mean,
11
it's
next
a deluxe
year.
Version, but that's a big deal sales-wise. I mean, obviously, this is the kind of thing that varies by region. You know, in Japan, Splatoon 2 is the most evergreen of Switch games so far. In America, Zelda has got a claim to that title. Here, it's Mario Kart. Mario Kart is the one that's always still in the charts because that's what people buy with the system, because we do like racing games an inordinate amount in this country.
So I did a quick piece of research because I just wanted to know what were the top-selling games on Wii? Because Wii U, I think we could just say, like, fuck that. The thing's gone. Besides Wii Sports, it's Mario Kart, obviously, selling a fucking absurd 36.9 million copies.
Shocking, yeah.
Yep.
That's
outrageous. New Super Mario Bros. Wii's got to be one of them, surely.
30. It's a fifth.
Yeah.
Fourth. It's after Wii Sports Resort.
Oh wow.
I would not have
33 million copies of Wii Sports Resort were sold.
What about Wii Fit? Is that
that's sixth at 22.6.
Wow.
And then Wii Fit Plus is 21.1. So Brawl's all
yeah,
the way down
the
here
thing.
Like at 10th at 13.
About... Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, Brawl's
so like if you go through
well,
this
but...
list, what does Nintendo need to get out? Well, so you run into Mario Party at 8.5. So I mean, probably that team's doing something besides remixing 100 fucking nightmares into one cartridge.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the way they've been pushing the Switch, the whole multiplayer hijinks thing. I mean,
there will be a Mario Party.
It's got to happen, and it's the kind of thing you could expect sooner than later compared to some of this. Probably not Retro Studios on that one, but
no, that's it. Retro's rebooting Mario Party. then you're into Mario Galaxy. Well, we've already accounted for that. Then it's Zelda. We've accounted for that. Then it's Mario and Sonic. Well, that's probably going to happen, but who gives a shit? And they don't publish or develop that. Sega does both. Although I think Nintendo published it in Japan.
Yeah, that's kind of.
And then you get Donkey Kong Country Returns.
I would not be surprised if Retro's working on another one.
6.5 million copies.
Yeah, it would not surprise me if that's the next Retro game.
Although kind of, it seems.
But,
it does. One thing I'll say, like, we talk about New Super Mario Brothers and DKC, like, it is kind of a gap for now in terms of Nintendo's, you know, top line stuff. The indie stuff, you're great for 2D platformers, but, you know, with Odyssey being, you know, more back to the 64 style and everything, like, they do need that. But then you've got Kirby and Yoshi filling that, so you wonder whether it'd be the best time to deploy DK in particular, like New Super Mario Brothers at the end of the year. I mean, that could be, or something like it. I don't know whether they'd consider like changing the branding or the art style at this point, but
yeah, like the challenge is, do you redo the art or do you say, okay, here's a Mario Maker port? Because Mario Maker sold a shit ton of copies.
And that's another thing we've talked about, and it's another thing that they probably feel like hasn't quite got the day in the sun it deserves
yet.
Well,
I mean, they saw what happened when they dumped that thing on 3DS in Japan, even though it's a really poor excuse for that game.
It's kind of not fully realized.
It blew out the doors in
Japan.
Yeah,
and it did pretty well. So they may, I could see... that, and also, you know, that may be tying that into the whole online launch that we got, because that's going to be one of the different things.
We had to start thinking about that, don't we?
Yeah, because next year, in that sense, is going to be different, because there's going to be the actual subscription service at some point, presumably, and that, you know, promises some, you know, amount of content that comes with it, particularly with reference to classic games and all that. So the, you know, the methods by which they try and keep people engaged with the system periodically become a bit more diverse, rather than just you know, the sort of big retail release every month.
I want to point something out real quick. In the Wii era, you could put Wii on front of fucking anything and sell copies of it, because what sold more than Mario Party 8 by about 500,000 copies was Wii Party, which is just Mario Party without the branding.
Well, it's also a better game.
I mean, it's all relative. It's still it's still one of those games.
If you, I thought you were going to say Wii Music.
Yeah,
no. Wii Music is probably on this list. Let's see what. Yeah, 3.24 million copies of Wii Music were sold.
Still,
so,
I mean, that's kind of damning in a way for that. I mean, I've never played that game, so I don't really want to speak ill of it when I've nothing to base that on. But it says something about the word of mouth that, as you said, you know, that branding at that time had such power, and yet, you know, they gave it such a big push that year. And it generated, though, you know, I mean, not insignificant at all, you know, but relatively very modest sales.
That would probably be the top selling game on Wii U.
Oh, no, I think, to be fair, I think Mario Kart 8 has a ridiculous attach rate.
Yeah, it's like 80%
something like
or something.
8 million sold when there's 13.5 consoles, which is ridiculous.
Something like that. Something stupid. But. So if you're thinking about what's important, the argument for Donkey Kong is you could make the same Wii U argument of Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. Recently kind of got a little bit of a bump on the internet because a YouTube content creator did a video basically documenting the ways it's just better in every way than its predecessor.
And bloody good game. I'm
the conclusion was that, like, oh my God, it's the one sequel that does every single thing better. And, like, it probably could stand to get repackaged because it sold, like, less than 1 million units. It's not on the million seller list right here, which is not great. Because otherwise it's Mario, Nintendo Land, which is a pack-in, Splatoon, Mario, Zelda, Mario, Wii Party U, which is still the worst name in the history of the world.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Woolly World, Zelda, Pokken. Like, that's all the million sellers on Wii U. So there's nothing to learn from this.
Yay, Yoshi.
Yay, Yoshi.
We made it, Yoshi. We did it.
So, like, somewhere in here, like, our answer is Mario, now that I think about it, we still don't have a big tentpole game, though. Like, we have some ports.
I don't know. I think that the Kirby game is set to do to the Kirby series what Super Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild did for their respective franchises.
So what pills have you
so fresh and different? It makes friends in this one.
Game changer.
It's big. What? That is big, sir.
Guillaume, are you mixing your drugs and alcohol again? Because you need to stop.
I don't drink alcohol. I only drink the refreshing taste of Coke.
There we go.
You already established that.
Of course. I mean, for me, the biggest thing about Kirby is, I mean, the 3DS games have been really good. Robobot was great.
It was.
Triple Deluxe was great. But this year promises to bring back the multiplayer angle that the Wii game had, Return to Dreamland.
What is it that... The problem with Kirby is Kirby's audience is Kirby's audience. It doesn't, you know, it's not like Zelda can fluctuate pretty broadly.
Usually, you know, it's become kind of a a running joke that Kirby comes along at the end of consoles or handheld life cycles. Yeah, this is relatively early for Kirby, but for something as mainline as this, you might get one of the more experimental things like Canvas Curse was early for DS, but you know, for something that feels pretty much like straight up traditional, you know, Kirby side scrolling action, this is a bit soon. But I think it's gonna fill a gap that's there at the moment in terms of the first party stuff pretty nicely, but you know, it's gonna be early in the year. You know, talking about the big hitter towards the end, that, you know, yeah, that's still kind of up for grabs unless Pokemon arrives.
Yeah,
that's plenty exactly. big enough.
So I've got the top selling Nintendo franchises in front of me. So it's Mario, of course, in the lead at 560 million units, which is insane. And then Pokemon is like 300, and then the Wii series at 200. Well, that ain't coming back. But it's Zelda, Donkey Kong, Smash, and then Kirby down there at 8 at 35 million. So, you know, less than a tenth of Mario. But it's really got to be Pokemon either hits next year. Because if you think about, all right, here's an actual console experienced Pokemon. And we actually fucking tried. And it looks good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it needs to go all the way to like, what's that level 5 game coming out next year on PS4?
Ni No Kuni 2?
Yeah, it doesn't need to get all the way to Ni No Kuni 2. But like, let's say it comes out and it looks good, the style works. That's a huge, huge game release for Nintendo.
Yeah, it is.
Presumably, it's worth mentioning, presumably we talk about like some of the, you know, big third-party things maybe filling out a bit. At least next year in Japan, Dragon Quest XI would have to emerge at some junk point.
I hope so.
Yeah, that would be a, you know, another Biden class deal, I think.
Yeah, the mystery Dragon Quest game. But yeah, I mean, if we had Donkey Kong, even if they said like, all right, Tropical Freeze and I don't know, Returns are getting ported in a 2-pack.
Yeah, it seems plausible. I mean, they've milked Returns plenty with the 3D.
Yeah.
Poor already, but I mean, wouldn't hurt to throw it in there. I mean, not that I've taken Nintendo World Championships as some great, like, you know, kind of omen.
Blast Ball coming to Switch 2018.
they did work in a DKC minecart like sequence into that.
That's true. Birds, Guillaume nailed it. Birds and Beans 2.
Yeah. Well, that already exists. I mean,
no, that doesn't stop Mario Kart. Birds and Beans 2.
Yeah, Birds and Beans remastered.
Nice.
Birds and Beans mastered for the first time. We didn't master it the first time.
No.
Birds and Beans, the complete edition. That's what they'll call it. And it's the exact same game as the first one.
it was built complete. What are you going to do? Sue me.
It's got to be either, I feel like it's got to either be a new Smash or Pokemon. Or, I mean, could they launch a new franchise?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it could be something you never even knew you wanted.
Yeah, I mean, ARMS, you know, has not been the biggest success out of some of those games that have launched this year, but I think it probably achieved.
It was respectable.
Especially for kind of an online only game. I mean, it's not online only, but it is online only.
Effectively. Yeah,
any kind of legit kind of lasting appeal, really, unless, you know, you're lucky enough to like have somebody you could kind of regularly spar with in it or something, I guess. For a lot of people, it's going to be highly dependent on that. And again, I mean, the dynamics of that are going to change next year when that's linked to a pay service. And again, I kind of feel like they've got a, you know, they came out with these strong online presence games kind of back-to-back-to-back, really, with Mario Kart.
It felt like they were trying to sell an online service that wasn't
ready. Then, yeah, the service was not there, you know, and the app came.
The app, which also wasn't ready.
No, I mean, it's improved, you know, since it was first talked about, in terms of, like, actually not, like, completely overtaking your phone, which is kind of important if you're trying to capitalize on the ubiquitous nature of smartphones. That'll be different next year. But, I mean, the new IP seems, you know, somewhat likely somewhere. Maybe that could be the Retro Studios sort of gap somewhere, but what kind of game is obviously guessing.
I think there's also the potential that we saw with Tecmo Koei, where they announced here's Fire Emblem Warriors, or with Mercury Steam, where it's like, hey, we've given somebody fucking Metroid and said, go nuts. Mm-hmm. But go nuts in our prescribed way, please. you know, we'll have stuff like that pop out. It's finding that like this is the Nintendo core backed project. There will be something, because the one thing I think Nintendo learned from Wii U, and this is one of the things they've talked about, is you can't have years where it's like, I don't know, put out the shell of a game called Mario Tennis because we ain't got nothing.
I think they'd already, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I think
that, you know, it was pretty much already time to withdraw the troops from the Wii U at that stage.
But they've talked about it a lot, and they can't go back on that now. Like,
No, I just think more like, you know, after Christmas of 2012, you know, going into 2013, that was the real, you know. That period where kind of Wind Waker HD was coming out eventually, and the sort of infamous direct with the, oh, this stuff is coming eventually, including what would become Yoshi's Woolly World, like, nearly 3 years later, you know. Like, that stretch of time, I think, was where they really got it wrong, and they've already avoided that. We've already passed that stage in Switch's life, and the sales are good, and the software space has been better. So, you know, we're past that, fortunately. So, you know, now you could say, well, they could afford perhaps some more spaces, you know, in the launches of games, maybe, than they could before. But at the same time, if you look at it another way, in terms of, you know, okay, we have this system that's hot right now, it's selling, people are buying games for it, you know, in particular, because it's one thing to buy the device, but, you know, it seems like it's moving the units and the software as well. Then you say to yourself, well, look, if we don't, you know, get the smooth sort of schedule of releases now, we're just doing ourselves out of money. You know, that's the other way of looking. It's like, well, you know, it's actually more urgent when you've got a system that's doing well. Not in terms of, oh, we've got to keep the system afloat, but in terms of there's money to be made, or we've just got to reach out and take it by putting something on sale. You know, so they may well be thinking about it that way and saying, yeah, we need to line these things up, you know, neatly in a row, and we've got an audience we can rely on to buy them.
Well, the one other thing that we didn't talk about, and we're going to do this really fast, is they still have a stable of indie games that they've been promoting coming out on their digital space, that while they're not the publisher or developer, they do get that sweet platform holder cash. And so, John, would you read the next incredibly short email?
Certainly. John writes, just curious to hear the team's most anticipated indie games. Personally, I'm hyped for 9 Parchments, 99 Vitas, Floor Kids, Shakedown Hawaii, Owlboy, and Rocket League.
Nice. So I'll kick off here a little bit. We're gonna roll through these real quick. Travis Strikes Again sounds stupid, and I want to see what the hell they're doing.
And that's like multiple indie games, so it's kind of like cheating.
Yeah, right. A little bit. But like the fact that basically is like, we've been working with indie games, we're gonna do something. Yeah, and that was his sales pitch. Like, I'm in.
It was an advance on his stage appearance.
Broke the translator by talking about strong style wrestling, because the building they're in is used for wrestling. It's like, great, awesome, you fuck. I love you. Shovel Knight King of Cards is coming out next year, which I've already technically bought. And, I've enjoyed all of them, some more than others, but great, more Shovel Knight. And, the 9 Parchments does look really interesting.
Same here. Yep.
I've got so many, I don't know, I don't have enough time to play everything. Like, I still have, what was that game called? Ever Oasis? To play at some
3DS.
Point. And I received, like, Etrian Odyssey. And, like, I don't know. I can't.
You're good on Ever Oasis.
Oh god, but there's so much.
But I already have it.
Yeah, there's so much 3DS RPG stuff still. You still got Deep Strange Journey coming.
Right.
I have the DS
version of that Radiant to Historia. Play still. Yeah. No, I'm just kind of drowning in games, so it's hard to look forward to anything. And I don't feel.
Well, all right. In that case, John,
you're talking my language.
I've been playing with Karen Grim Fandango recently, and right after we're done with that, I think I'm going to get Thimbleweed Park, which already came out, but, you know, I haven't had time to play that. And
that's,
in the future,
that's on a Halloween discount right now.
It doesn't have a time bonus. Like, we're not getting an extra hour this weekend, so I'm going to wait a little bit still before buying it. And in the future, Rive... by
you took mine. That's easily mine. I know it's already out on PS4, but I don't have a PS4. I love Tokitori 2. I love the look of this, the shooter kind of capote look. I've always thought it looked really cool, and obviously there are reviews out there for the PS4 version and all that now, so, you know, I've got a very solid idea of what the game is like, and they're talking about, you know, that it runs really well on Switch and all that. Super excited for Rive.
Yeah, and those guys just know how to make a game. Like, you know, Tokitori 2 really impressed me.
Yeah, it was good.
John?
For me, it'd be Floor Kids. I want to see if they can actually pull off a breakdancing game and make it fun and cool and actually kind of make it not a circus.
Like, you know, here's the question. Would you rather it look cool and play simply, or have really complex play and look kind of janked?
I'd rather it be simple and fun to play. But at the same time, I don't want it to be like some watered-down version of breakdancing, like, you know, like actually a little bit of complexity to it, but, you know.
So, like, you kind of want the, what was that skateboarding game that you just controlled with the Ollie Ollie? You want, like, the breakdancing version of Ollie Ollie?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I could, that's a box quote for the game that has no box and would never publish that quote.
Exactly. Nine Parchments also looks cool as well. I've mentioned that one before. Kind of a Diablo sort of experience, which I'm always down for. So I'm curious to see how that turns out. Sip.
Cool. Greg?
Yeah, just other than Rive, there's a couple of sort of obvious ones here. Rocket League. I've had Xbox. I've had the chance, you know, to play it before, but I haven't actually taken up on that because I just don't feel like it's kind of game I'd like to sort of casually pick up for a few matches here there, and that's just not something I'm going to be doing on Xbox One, so it coming to Switch for me is kind of the way that I can, you know, get into it maybe finally, and I think it's the kind of game I'd enjoy. And then on top of that, there's kind of obvious, you know, it's been promised for a while now, you know, going right back to the first unveil of Switch, but Runner 3. I mean, that's
oh god, I forgot.
It's a pretty big deal for me. I said many times I really, like, really, really liked Runner 2 and the original, for that matter, on WiiWare. So, that remains, you know, alongside Rive, probably the most anticipated one for my money.
Cool. Well, Greg, speaking of Runner, the original Runner, BitTrip Runner, and the BitTrip series, do we have any WiiWare suggestions for this week?
We do. We're going to give Clex Yoshi his due. The man who, you know, guided James through his Mario Sunshine playthrough. So he certainly has got the capital to get his WiiWare recommendation in here. But everyone else is welcome to provide them for us at rfn@nintendoworldreport.com, along with the music requests. Clex Yoshi, huge, huge fan of Llama Llama, which is a sort of MSX styled, gotta get. Obviously, it's Metroid-ish, but it's very particularly patterned on sort of obtuse MSX games, which was a Japanese personal computer standard
from Microsoft, of all people.
Yeah. That there was a sort of alternate version of Castlevania, kind of at the same time that Castlevania was on Famicom NES, you had Vampire Killer on MSX, which was a sort of very similar but a different style of game because it was screen by screen. It was more about finding keys and stuff. So it's kind of got some of its roots in that kind of style of game. But Collect Yoshi, as you said, a very impassioned, extended take on the game in his email that we haven't got time to go through in its entirety here. He does say that to me it's possibly the most delightful form of trolling ever devised. So if that doesn't make you want to go and download it from the Wii Shop channel, I don't know what would. I actually, this is trapped on my Wii, as it were, because I never did transfer over stuff because of the kind of the problems that I kind of held off, and I didn't transfer my Wii stuff to Wii U because of the problems that it has for displaying the virtual console games nicely.
Yeah,
my Wii is not hooked up like at this step. My Japanese Wii is, but my European Wii that had this on, where I kind of made a start on the game, is sort of out of circulation at the moment. But it could be brought back if we ever did want to do this one day or whatever. It seems like the kind of game I could get into, although the obtuseness. Yeah, is certainly deliberate, but it's still there. So I don't know. It's an interesting proposition, but well worth the shout out, I think, because it is not as kind of widely available as something like Cave Story, which was also came to WiiWare, but has been on so many other Nintendo platforms since.
And before it was on platforms.
As long as La Mulana has that Super Nintendo Rewind feature, I'm good. I'm sure I can beat it as well.
Nice.
Yeah, fair point.
Well, that will do it for email this week and the show. As Greg pointed out, you can send your emails to RFN at Nintendo World Report. You can also send your WiiWare recommendations. You know what? You can even send virtual console for games that are exclusive on the Wii. I'm going to open the door.
Absolutely. If there's something that we're looking at it and think, it's pretty. I mean, like I said, for some reason, there's still virtual console games coming out on Wii U longer than we would have thought. I think Lords of Thunder is still coming eventually. So you don't have to feel obligated to write in with that. But yeah, any of the ones that look like they're that you're gonna die with that, definitely, I would be welcome those very much.
Yep. And of course, your end music. Like, Greg, what do we have this week?
No fan requests this week. This week I was trying to just look in at the occasions and thinking what's the best we've got. The big Mario game, the kind of huge event in any Nintendo hardware's life. We've got Halloween coming up. And then was it a day or two after that? I think it's the 10th anniversary of Super Mario Galaxy.
He's pulling
release.
The threads together. God, 10 years. Oh, my
10,
God.
I know, there's Damn. Something about that just weirds me out more than 15 for Sunshine. Like, it troubles me more.
It's gonna be when it's 10 for 2. And like, I'm like, oh, God, I reviewed that game 10 years ago that I'm going to have a nervous breakdown on this show because you'll say it was the end music because 10 years ago, and I'll just start crying and I won't know why.
Get used to it, buddy.
Yeah, none of us are getting any younger.
Yeah,
but,
that's right.
Also, that marks the 10th anniversary of the first time I ever recorded RFN. It was the day that Galaxy came out, and I was on with Carl and Mike and Johnny.
And you came back.
And
amazing.
And Evan
Twice.
Was out trying to get the game or something. I forget exactly the circumstances, but yeah, that was the first time I recorded. I was eagerly anticipating Galaxy coming out because we used to record on a different day. And I recorded in the evening as well. It was great.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, lots of great memories bound up in Galaxy. But to pull together all the threads, Mario, Galaxy, Odyssey, and Halloween, I've gone with something from the Galaxy soundtrack, which is terrific. Obviously, there's any number of choices that'd be excellent. But Waltz of the Booze is the kind of token spooky kind of theme. And also, it just seems appropriate now that I've got a good look at Cappy, who's looking suspiciously Boo-like. This is a fun, not actually that creepy, but still really enjoyable music song that's appropriate for the season.
It makes Luigi's absence all the more vexing.
No, not
this game is.
Can you imagine if you had to grow up with Luigi? You wouldn't want him around either.
Luigi takes care of the booze, of the ghosts, and then Mario freaking replaces
them
with a freaking
goo. He takes care of them like they take your dog to the farm. Yeah, he takes care of the ghosts, exactly.
Right,
yeah,
but then he freaking gets replaced by a freaking ghost. Like, it's, I don't know, by his own brother. Like, I can't think of a worse betrayal.
I can. John,
he's teamed up with a he's teamed up with a completely uncharismatic God knows machine before. So.
Good point.
He's, you know, I mean, he's got previous on this.
Bye, everybody. Enjoy Mario Odyssey.
It's live on eShop. Go buy it. I'm still waiting
Go
for
buy
my code.
It.
I'm still waiting for my code. By the way,
spend money.
Bye. Well,
Bye-bye.
Pay us, Nintendo, to tell people to spend money. Bye.
And drink refreshing Coke.